Concerto for Siren and Serotonin. 3. The wind came and went like heavy surf, vibrating street-side window panes, driving icy pellets against the stone lions flanking the entranceway. These sounds were intensified as the door to the Jokertown Clinic was opened. A man entered and began stamping his feet and brushing snow from his dark blue blazer. He made no effort to close the door behind him. Madeline Johnson, sometimes known as the Chicken Foot Lady, doing a partial front desk death watch for her friend Cock Robin, with whom she had a good thing going, looked up from her crossword puzzle, stroked her wattles with her pencil, and squawked, "Close the damn door, mister!" The man lowered the handkerchief with which he had been wiping his face and stared at her. She realized then that his eyes were faceted, his jaw muscles bunched and unbunched. "Sorry," he said, and he drew the door closed. Then he turned his head slowly, seeming to study everything in the room, though with those eyes it was difficult to tell for certain. Finally, "I've got to talk to Dr. Tachyon," he said. "The doctor is out of town," she stated, "and he's going to be away for some time. What is it that you want?" "I want to be put to sleep," he said. "This isn't a veterinary clinic," she told him, and regretted it a moment later when he moved forward, for he developed a distinct halo and began emitting sparks like a static electricity generator. She doubted this had much to do with virtue, for his teeth were bared and he clenched and unclenched his hands, as if anticipating strenuous activity. "This is an emergency," he said. "My name is Croyd Crinson, and there's probably a file. Better find it. I get violent." She squawked again, leaped and departed, leaving two pin feathers to drift in the air before him. He put out a hand and leaned upon her desk, then mopped his brow again. His gaze fell upon a half-filled coffee cup beside her newspaper. He picked it up and chugged it. Moments later, there came a clattering sound from the hallway beyond the desk. A blonde, blue-eyed young man halted at the threshold and stared at him. He had on a green and white polo shirt, a stethoscope, and a Beach Boy smile. From the waist down, he was a Palomino pony, his tail beautifully braided. Madeline appeared behind him and fluttered. "He's the one," she told the centaur. "He said violent." Still smiling, the quadrupedal youth entered the room and extended his hand. "I'm Dr. Finn," he said. "I've sent for your file, Mr. Crinson. Come on back to an examination room and you can tell me what's bothering you while we wait for it." Croyd took his hand and nodded. "Any coffee back there?" "I think so. We'll get you a cup." Croyd paced the small room, swilling coffee, as Dr. Finn read over his case history, snorting on several occasions and at one point making a noise amazingly like a whinny. "I didn't realize you were the sleeper," he said finally, closing the file and looking at his patient. "Some of this material has made the textbooks." He tapped the folder with a well-manicured finger. "So I've heard," Croyd replied. "Obviously, you have a problem you just can't wait for your next cycle to clear up," Dr. Finn observed. "What is it?" Croyd managed a bleak smile. "It's the matter of getting on with the crapshoot, of actually going to sleep." "What's the problem?" "I don't know how much of this is in the file," Croyd told him, "but I've a terrible fear of going to sleep. Yes, there is something about your paranoia. Perhaps some counseling?" Croyd punched a hole in the wall. "It's not paranoia," he said. "Not if the danger is real. I could die during my next hibernation. I could wake up as the most disgusting joker you can imagine, with a normal sleep cycle. Then I'd be stuck that way. It's only paranoia if the fear is groundless, isn't it?" "Well," Dr. Finn said, "I suppose we could call it that if the fear is a really big thing, even if it is justified. I don't know. I'm not a psychiatrist. But I also saw in the file that you tend to take amphetamines to keep from falling asleep for as long as you can. You must know that that's going to add a big chemical boost to whatever paranoia is already present. Croyd was running his finger around the inside of the hole he had punched in the wall, rubbing away loose pieces of plaster. But of course a part of this is semantics, Dr. Finn went on. It doesn't matter what we call it. Basically, you're afraid to go to sleep. This time, though, you feel that you should. Croyd began cracking his knuckles as he paced. Fascinated, Dr. Finn counted each cracking noise. When the seventh popping sound occurred, he began to wonder what Croyd would do when he was out of knuckles. 8, 9, 10, he subvocalized. Croyd punched another hole in the wall. Would you like some more coffee? Dr. Finn asked him. Yes, about a gallon. Dr. Finn was gone, as if a starting gate had opened. Later, not telling Croyd it was decaf he was guzzling, Dr. Finn continued, I'm afraid to give you any more drugs on top of all the amphetamines you've taken. I've made two promises, Croyd said, that I'd try sleeping this time, that I wouldn't resist. But if you can't knock me out fast, I'll probably leave rather than put up with all this anxiety. If that happens, I know I'll be back on Benny's and Dex's fast. So hit me with a narcotic. I'm willing to take my chances. Dr. Finn shook his mane. I'd rather try something simpler and a lot safer first. What say we do a little brainwave entrainment and suggestion? I'm not familiar with the procedure, Croyd said. It's not traumatic. The Russians have been experimenting with it for years. I'll just clip these little soft pads to your ears, he said, swabbing the lobes with something moist, and we'll pulse a low-amp current through your head, say 4 hertz. You won't even feel it. He adjusted a control on the box from which the leads emerged. Now what? Croyd asked. Close your eyes and rest for just a minute. You may notice a kind of drifting feeling. Yeah. But there's heaviness, too, within it. Your arms are heavy, and your legs are heavy. They're heavy, Croyd acknowledged. It will be hard to think of anything in particular. Your mind will just go on drifting. I'm drifting, Croyd agreed. And it should feel very good. Probably better than you've felt all day, finally getting a chance to rest. Breathe slowly and let go in all the tight places. You're almost there already. This is great. Croyd said something, but it was muttered, indistinguishable. You're doing very well. You're quite good at this. Usually I count backward from 10. For you, though, we can start at 8. Since you're almost asleep already. 8. You were far away, and it feels fine. 9. You were already asleep, but now you were going into it even more deeply. 10. You will sleep soundly, without fear or pain. Sleep. Croyd began to snore. There were no spare beds. But since Croyd had stiffened to mannequin-like rigidity before turning bright green, his respiration and heartbeat slowing to something between that of a hibernating bear and a dead one, Dr. Finn had had him placed, erect, at the rear of a broom closet, where he did not take up much space, and he drove a nail into the door and hung the chart on it, after having entered, patient, extremely suggestible.